It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, everybody. Thurl Bailey here. Welcome to Thurl Talk, another week with another great guest. That's the nice thing about having your own podcast, right? Because one, you can have on anybody you want to. Hopefully those folks are interesting. I guarantee you that my guest today is very interesting because if you remember anything about that 1983 Jim Valvano coached basketball team, you remember the guy at the end, not the guy who took the last shot, but the guy who, well, maybe, you ask this guy, he's still wondering why he didn't get an assist for the dunk that went in for Lorenzo Charles at the end of the game. Derek Wittenberg, number 25 in your heart, the guy who helped lead us, 1983 Wolfpack, to a national championship. Witt, great to have you on today, my brother.
Well, thank you very much, Thurl. It's exciting to talk a little bit 83, and always great to talk to one of my teammates, and we achieved something that is going to stay with us for a lifetime.
Absolutely, and then beyond that, Witt, I'm glad I got you on today because, as I said, I love having guests on to talk about their stories. But the other opportunity, too, is that championship really never gets old. I know you've got a book coming out that talks about, you know, your life and where you grew up. I've got one coming out, titled still to the title I have working right now is Team of Destiny, but that might change. We were a lot of things, but I want to really start right there, right? Because I think if most people, there are millions of people who've watched the documentary, the 30 for 30, in which you spearheaded as one of the producers on it. And we're so grateful for that, for you to just have the wherewithal to say, listen, this needs to be on video. And I know there aren't many people that I know of with that haven't seen that. But I want you to let's go down memory lane a little bit about the time that we were recruited. You and I, we came from the same area, didn't live too far from each other in Maryland. But we both committed to NC State because a very good coach, Norm Sloan, recruited us there. He got to my mother. I'm sure he got to your mother, too. And we committed to NC State and went through a year with him. But he decided to leave after our freshman year. So, and I've talked about my reaction. Where were you? What was your state of mind after your freshman season at NC State? And Norm Sloan says, you know, guys, I'm taking off. Where were you at that time?
You know, contemplating just like everybody else. I think that we believe, and we're naive when we're young to think that, okay, this coach has recruited us, Norm Sloan, he loves us, he's going to be our coach, and we had no idea that your coach is going to leave after your freshman year. So you never dreamed or thought about that would be that happened, but nevertheless, that happened. And I'm thinking that there was rumors about my high school coach, Morgan Wooten, who was a great coach, a very successful high school coach, that was going to be the next coach. So I had those thoughts in my mind, but had no idea what to do next. One thing I do remember is that I never intended to leave NC State. Although we committed to the coach, but we also committed to the school, we also committed to playing in the ACC, and it was a great environment. So we loved NC State, and I thought, okay, let's wait and see who's going to be the next coach, and then we'll make a decision from there.
Well, my first reaction to that answer is, what you talking about, Willis? Because I was getting out of there. I called my mom. I said, Mom, Coach Sloan, he's leaving. I'm coming home. My mom said, son, you may be going somewhere, but you ain't coming here. So she she talked me into staying with, and that's interesting because our state of minds were different. And I didn't know for a long time that, you know, that you had never even thought about leaving, because we all had our own individual decisions to make. But, hey, I'm glad you didn't leave. So we get through this process, right, where we all decide to give this next guy a shot, give him a chance. And we're sitting in and we're sitting somewhere, and we're waiting on him to come in. And that's our first introduction to him. I didn't know much about him. I don't know how much knowledge you had about V before he came in from Iona. But talk about that first introduction and what was going through your mind. Were you sold right away, or how? What was your attitude?
Well, my attitude was a little different. I want to go back a little bit just to add something. You know, NC State was my first choice. I watched Raycom Sports Saturday morning at ACC. My cousin David Thompson played at NC State and won a national championship. So my decision by going to State was my first choice. This is where I wanted to be. And so going there in my first year, we had a pretty successful year. We were going 20-8 and losing in the tournament. We thought we had a chance to go to the to Final Four and have a chance to win the national championship. So Norm leaves, and then next thing you know, we're sitting contemplating, and in comes this, I thought it was going to be my high school coach, but in comes this coach from Iona, New York, this Italian guy that seems like, this guy seems like an entertainer more than he seemed like a coach.
Do you remember that confident strut he walked in with? I mean, it was almost teetering on arrogant a little bit. He kind of walked in with this, but that was him. He walked in with this kind of strut that was confident, like he knew who he was. And did you get that sense too?
Absolutely. First of all, more than confidence, in my view, this guy had tremendous personality, right? Most coaches were very reserved. Norm Song was reserved. Dean Smith, all the coaches in the league were reserved. But here's this flamboyant Italian guy from New York with all this personality. He was funny. He was witty. And right away, I felt comfortable with him because he gave me this appearance that, like, this guy is like a player's coach. So the way I look at him is, wow, this guy is like, He's kind of exciting. He's kind of interesting. He's not the typical coach that you've seen or been coached by. So I was kind of excited about, after his conversation at the press conference, I was kind of excited about what was next, being coached by Coach B.
You know, all those things that you described, it's interesting because all those things you described that you liked about him remind me of you. I mean, I spent some years with you. And I knew that you were that energetic guy who wasn't afraid to be yourself. You know, there were winters where we were walking together, and I'd see you just go tackle people you didn't even know in the snow. You remember those years? Come on, admit to it. And I said, wait, what are you doing? But you were that outgoing guy. You were that guy who had that kind of personality. So I could see how V's personality and yours would match. I could see how you would get excited. I was a little more reserved, right? I was kind of wait and see, you know, how he's going to be, but you're right. I mean, he came in with that confidence, and there was something that you were drawn to him. And you remember that first speech as well as I do, when he confidently said that he was going to win a national championship. Who says that on their first meeting with their players? I mean, how confident do you have to be to throw that hook in the water and see what you get?
Well, Phil, what we, as we look back, one thing that we now understand with V, when he came here, he had a vision and he had a purpose. And he took his job for that vision and for that purpose. And he wanted to accomplish something. And that gave me an idea that this man knew what he wanted. He talked about it. He believed in it. And he also embraced the history of NC State. He knew NC State had won the championship before with Norm Song in 74. So it goes to show you that he did his homework. This is what place what he wanted to be. And this was kind of his opportunity. Here he is coaching in the best conference in the country. Here's a guy from New York City that's coming down south and has an opportunity to win a national championship. He embraced that. the man had some vision, and he talked about it, he believed in it, and in turn, as a leader, he got us to believe in his vision as well.
Hey, we all want to be accepted, and at some level, we all want to be liked at some level. V was really none of those things to his peers when he first came to NC State. Dean Smith, Mike Krzyzewski was just coming on the scene. Here comes this guy that seems like he knows the ACC. So talk about the fact that, you know, he wasn't really embraced by a lot of folks around him when he first came.
Wasn't embraced, but by my opportunity having a chance to coach with him, and plan for him, I saw a different Valvano. And he wasn't accepted in the beginning because, listen, basically he's an outsider. You got Lefty Rizal at Maryland. You got Dean Smith. Bobby Crimmins was new. You had all the old guard of all the other coaches around. And Krzyzewski was new. You know, so like in Virginia, you had Terry Holland, who was one of the one of the traditional coaches. So when he came in, he was like an oddball, and he was not accepted, not just for the mere fact that he was different, but because he wasn't like the traditional coach.
Right.
And I think he understood that. But the way V operated, he had a lot of respect for and appreciation for being a coach in the ACC at NC State. So although he was brass and confident and cocky at sometimes, he had a lot of respect for Dean Smith. He had respect for Lefty Rizal.
Right.
And I think that's why he had success with him, because he did not underestimate anybody. He just thought that he could compete with any coach in the ACC.
Well, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit because we're going to take a break in just a few minutes, but I want to get into the fact that, listen, the rest is history, as they say. Millions of people know the outcome of that 83 championship season. I really want to jump into your thought process and your vision of bringing this journey to the TV, to television, right? Take me through that process of Derek Wittenberg, the champion, and now you've become this executive producer, and we'll get more into that in the second half of what you've been up to lately. But that production of the 30 for 30 Survive in Advance just told about the journey so well. I mean, and different parts of it. Lorenzo Charles, it started out with his funeral and you taking us there and talking about if we don't start getting together, you know, more often, we're gonna lose people along the way. So what got you into that side of things and has kept you there?
Well, first of all, it was the circumstances that really got me into film. You know, I was fired as a coach at Fordham University and had three contracts, and I was doing pretty well. And then 2 years into my third contract, I got fired. And I'm sitting on the couch. You know, I'm working for ESPN, and I'm being a commentator, and I saw the film Fab Five, and I saw what Jalen Rose and those guys did. Wonderful film about their story of the five guys that started at Michigan and them going through and almost winning the championship. And I said to a friend of mine, Jonathan Hawk, who's the director of the film, I said, John, I think the 83 story needs to be told, and can you help me do that? And lo and behold, it wasn't easy. It took about 2 years for ESPN to finally to say yes.
Did he know the story already? Did Jonathan know it already?
No, Jonathan had an idea. He knew the story, but he didn't know the story like we knew the story.
Right.
And he was excited about it. Everybody in ESPN knew the story. A lot of people knew the story. Like I said, millions of people have seen the story.
Right.
But the story hadn't really been told. You know, you got to understand, this is 20-something years after the 83 championship, and it's never been told. So the 2000, I think it was the 30th anniversary of our championship was coming up in 2013. So I think the opportunity was there.
Right.
And that's why it came across. We finally got to go ahead to do the film. And I think it was a film 30 years, me looking back, to telling the journey about my teammates, to tell the journey about Coach Vibano's vision, and to tell people, wow, this you need to find out the details of how this journey was. And this was an extraordinary journey. This wasn't just about one game. This was about a journey of about 11 games.
Right.
And all the personalities and all the trials and tribulations that we went through to win that championship, we think it was going to be an outstanding story. And the rest is history, like you said earlier.
Well, we are going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and I want to have a follow-up question about you in the production world. I know you've got some things in the works right now, but I also want to see what you're up to today. And we'll be right back with Derek Wittenberg.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Thorough Talk. I've got my former teammate and champion, Derek Wittenberg, on the show today. And Witt, you just finished talking about that production of the 30 for 30, Survive in Advance. You mentioned something earlier when you started talking about what spurred that on. You've been in the coaching world as well, collegiate, right? You just talked about you being fired. I want to just have a quick conversation with you about the state of college coaching right now, the kids, the approach, maybe the patience or impatience of that university to stick with a guy to get results. Take me through your first experience as a head coach, right? And maybe touch a little bit on how you prepared for that, being an assistant coach, and then how you really took that journey as a head coach and what your experiences were.
Wow, as an assistant and head coach in college, I think I've been involved in college athletics for over 30 years. And when I was assistant coach, I never imagined that that college coaching would be that grueling of a profession. You know, you think about college and you think like, you know, student athletes and you come in here to get a great education. And fortunate for us, Darryl, we were very fortunate to win a national championship. So you go to college for three different ways. You want to be a better person. You want to earn a college degree. And hopefully you want to win a national championship. And that doesn't always happen to everybody. And I got into coaching thinking that, man, we had a special moment in 83. But now I want to be a part of that experience for young people, like coming to college, having a great experience, getting your education, and hopefully you can put that banner up. V used to always talk about, put a banner up before you leave. And so I really gravitated to that notion that this is special. I love coaching. I love teaching. And got involved. And then it's different. So when we came to school, Thurl, we was excited and cherish the moment that we get a scholarship, first of all, and then have an opportunity to get a college degree, great education, and then the pros was an opportunity, right? After you finish, we thought you got to go through 4 years to finish.
Yep.
What's different today? You know, I coached one of the first one and dones while I was at Georgia Tech. You know, from 94 to 99, I coached the number one player in the country, Stephon Marbury. He's one of the first one-and-done guys back there in the mid-90s. And so the attitude and indoctrination of basketball changed. Now all these kids are thinking about, well, we got to go to college to get to the pros. And so our whole mindset now with these kids, the parents and everybody, is that now we want to get to the NBA. The education is secondary.
Right.
You know, being a better person is secondary. But we want to go to college so we can get to the NBA or the NFL. And that's just, unfortunately, that is the mindset right now. You know, big college now is a big business. And now the kids and the parents are thinking the same way. It's a business. And then when I go to college, one day my son or my daughter will have an opportunity to make a lot of money and play in the pros. And that's just the difference when we was raised. What, and now, what's expected of these kids now?
Well, what's that mechanism, though? I mean, a lot of people might say that it's AAU because it's structured different than when we were growing up, in a sense where it's more prevalent. And, you know, we know all the scandals with shoe companies and all that have gone by. But what are these kids being told? I mean, I heard that they're ranking kids now who are like 12, 13 years old. And so is that part of it? I mean, what's... what is it that's coming out of that household that's different now than when we were growing up?
Well, it's social media. Mm. It's technology. Kids can go in there and put themselves in a mock draft, like you referred to, like being ranked. You know, I remember my godson Travis McKay. He went to Wake Forest. He's a highly recruited kid out of Virginia, and he was talking about, I'm ranked. I'm ranked number 11th in the USA in my age group. I said, what?
How old is he?
You know, at the time he was 12 years old. Now he finished Wake Forest out. But I remember back then when he was 11 and 12 years old, following his career, he was being ranked.
Yeah.
You know, it's these scouting services. It's the shoe companies. It's their workout people. So
handlers.
To your point, it's a system. It's a system that's been created in sports, which does what? Make money. AAU tournaments, they got people making money. You have scouting services, they make money. It's all tied in to the university system. AAU, shoe companies, scouting services, tournaments, it's all in the same business model for everybody to make money.
And you have to play that game, right? If you're a college coach, whether you're D1 or whatever, you have to play that game. Am I mistaken?
Well, it's interesting to say game, but it's reality, right? I mean, it's the system. So, like, if you don't get the exposure by playing AAU, you don't get better. You don't have to play AAU, but that's where the best talent is. That's where the tournament is. That's where the college coaches is. So, you know, you have to be in that. You have to be in that system in order to, you know, progress along to get to college, to get to the NBA. So it's a whole system that has been created now that you basically got to be in it. If you're not in, I don't know nobody who's not in it. I don't know no kids that are not playing AAU.
Right.
I don't know no kids that are not doing shoe, that's not dealing with shoe companies and agents or what have you. So it's just a changed model, and it's a system that you got to deal with now.
So when you talk about today's athlete, and I know we've had this discussion before, is it us? I mean, we're old school, right? I mean, there are some things that pass the test of time, but is it just us needing to get caught up, kind of like technology? We got to learn how to use these. And we don't have the brick anymore, the brick phone like we used to use back in the day. We didn't even have cell phones at one point, but is it the fact that if you haven't caught up, with what these kids are doing and using, is that you're out of the game. You're not, you know, you only have that perception as to how to get them to the next level. How important is an education to a kid now that, you know, that may or may not have a chance to get to the next level?
Well, I want to change one phrase for us there. They call it old school. I call it real school. And what's real about what our values are, what we talk about, is called, I'm talking to the 99%.
Right.
The 99% of the kids who are not going to the pros, the 99% of the kids that after college, might not even play in their own sport. So, but the mentality of all the kids in college, every kid thinks they're going to play professional in basketball and football and women's basketball. Every kid, though, thinks that they – there was a survey done. They surveyed kids in Division III. 25% of the kids in Division III all thought they were going to the pros and going to the NBA. 56% of the kids in Division II thought they were going to the pros. In Division I, there was a survey where 89% of the kids in Division I thought they were going to the NBA. Now, that's a scary proposition. That's the real school.
Not a lot of jobs available. Not a lot of jobs available at that level.
Yeah, but, Darryl, here's the deal. You're not going to play that sport for the rest of your life, but you have a chance to be successful whatever you choose to be. So don't compromise your own journey. Don't compromise your education and put all your marbles in one basket, because if you don't make the NBA, if you don't make the NFL, then you think your life is over? There's millions of examples of people who are successful in all walks of life. And you can't tie your whole hopes and dreams on one thing. Even when NBA players finish their careers in 20, 30 years, they still have to be successful in being a businessman, being a family man. They still have things to accomplish after that. But the 99%, that's what I speak to around the country. That's what I speak to in these companies. I'm talking about the people who in regular life are lawyers, doctors, educators. There's a lot of people, CEOs and presidents, are successful everywhere. Being in entertainment and athletics is not the only profession that you can have success in. So that's what I preach. I call it the real school, the real world conversation with those who are not going to have that opportunity to play in the pros.
So, Whit, you and I, we do a lot of the same things now. We're using our platform to speak to these youth groups in corporate America about success and our perspective of it. But with those youngsters, you know, in their mind, they might not say it to you, but it's like, listen, Mr. Wittenberg, I ain't trying to hear that, right?
Yeah.
This is what I want. You know, everybody tells me to focus on that goal. Listen, there might be millions of others, but I'm up there. I mean, I'm putting in the work every single day. How do you basically rectify the fact that, you know, there might only be one person in there that you might get to? How do you, whether it's corporate America or youth?
Yeah, well, I think here's the way I approach that conversation. I said, I'm not trying to steal your dream away from you. I want you to go for it. I said, I want you to take a chance in running that business. I want you to, be the best player you can be. Be the best at whatever you want to do. I'm not taking that dream away. But I also want you in college. I want you to get your education and continue to learn and be educated. Because when it stops, when you can't do it anymore, that doesn't mean you can't be successful in life, in your own journey. So I'm saying go for it. I'm not taking that away from you. Dream big. Go for it. If you play in the NBA 20 years, great. Play in there 2 years, great. But just be prepared if you don't. I don't want you to be psychologically, I want you to prepare yourself that you have special talent, that you can be successful at whatever you choose to do. And everybody can't be an NBA player. Everybody can't be an entertainer. But it's a whole lot of other successful people doing a whole lot of other things that's important in life. And so in our, where we are now, Thurl, is that the reason why we go out and speak is because we speak with purpose now. Because the purpose is that we have to empower somebody else to believe in themselves and to believe in their own journey.
Yep.
And you people need that. They need that pep talk. They need that leadership. Because just because you're in a position of leadership, that don't mean you know how to lead. And that's what I talk to coaches about a lot. We learn, and in sports, we learn a lot of transferable skills that we can put to test to anything that we set our minds to. And so that's what I try to have that conversation with them. I try to teach them to, listen, yes, I want you to go for it, but look at yourself and all the talent that you have. And going forward, you can do whatever you dream about doing. Just be prepared to take the next step.
Very, very powerful words from Dirk Wittenberg. And Witt, you're like me. You're wearing a lot of hats right now. Everything you do has a purpose to it. Since 2015, you've been NC State's Associate AD. But you've got some other things going on with the Jimmy V Foundation, with your own foundation. Talk about what you're doing now and what you're looking forward to.
Well, I tell you what, I can't be more happier about my journey and my purpose and what's going on now. When I came back to NC State in 2013, this is where I wanted to be. This was not a job for me, being an ambassador and associate AD. This is a calling. And I just love the things that I'm involved in now because it entails helping people. And it's nothing more rewarding. You know, I say to myself, if you want to lift yourself up, lift someone else up today. And I love the work that we're doing at NC State with what I'm doing with the former student athletes and getting them back to school and mentoring our coaches and some of our former players. I love what we're doing at the V Foundation. We've raised a tremendous amount of money, but more importantly, the V Foundation, we've raised awareness, and 100% of every dollar goes directly to cancer research. And when Jim passed away in 93, nobody's even talking about cancer research and the awareness of cancer. And look where the V Foundation is today. And then my wife and I, we started the Dirk Wittenberg Foundation that advocates for juniors and seniors to help them finish college. And everybody advocates for kids getting into college, but it's a lot of kids that can't finish college.
Right.
So out of 11,000 organizations we have in North Carolina, it's 1,700 organizations and foundations in the Triangle area. We are the only ones that advocate to help kids finish college. And I think it's important because we still have a lot of first-generation graduates, and we have a lot of bright people that just need a little edge and a little help. Listen, Thurl, we cannot be successful without the help of others and without the support of others. So I just want to support some of these kids. I want to support our student-athletes. I want to support our students. And so the work I'm doing is like when I get up every day, I'm excited to help people. And so that's my purpose and my journey going forward for the rest of my life.
Well, how can people find you, Witt?
They can find me at DerekWittenberg.com. They can find me at thedwfoundation.org. They can find me on those two platforms. My foundation, and DerekWittenberg.com gives you a whole platform of my speaking and the things that I'm involved in. So please contact me. If I can help, I'd be happy to get involved in anything dealing with kids and education and philanthropy. I want to get involved and help. You know, one thing about community, Merrill, and people don't understand this, is that if you want to get involved, you have to be, you got to be present, and you got to be involved.
That's
and
right.
If everybody helps everybody's organization a little bit, we all will grow in a special way.
I love it, Whit. And I appreciate you being on the show today. And you know, I know you've been looking to get that assist for Lorenzo's dunk. It's not going to happen, my friend. It's not going to happen. But
Darryl,
yeah,
Darryl, let me tell you, people don't know a lot about you and your journey, but that quiet confidence, that quiet leadership. Because I think we had three different leaders on our team. We had Sidney, that was a quarterback, and he showed his leadership. He had me as a crazy man, that's the vocal guy, that goodness. But you had that spiritual leadership that we needed as well, that calmness and that poise that we needed as well. So our leadership was a three-pronged attack. And your leadership was just as valuable as any part of our leadership on our team.
Well,
and
I appreciate that.
Mind you that you scored a lot of points and you blocked a lot of shots. But besides that, people also respected your leadership and your poise and what you added to that team. So we love you, brother. We love what you did for us. I love what you're doing now. And I know your son is going to try the pros, and he's a talented kid. I wish he would have came to NC State. But I wish him all the luck in the world, and I wish you all the luck and all the great work that you're doing, and let's keep on doing what you're doing, brother.
I appreciate that, Whit. Brendan will be really grateful to hear that. And I just want to let our listeners know that, again, Derek right now is working on a book himself. Well, he'll go into Tweety Bird is what he was known as. You'll learn a lot more coming from him and his book, and just keep up with him. And I've got a forthcoming book as well that will talk about some backstories of that journey. So, Whit, thanks for joining us, and we will talk soon, man, and stay on that golf course as long as you can, my brother.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Whit. Thank you for joining us for Thorough Talk this week. Make sure you take care of each other, and we'll talk to you next week.
Years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.